Okay, so I'm going to talk about supergravity solution and the relevance for holographic matching, in particular for some matching which comes from supersymmetric localization. So I'm going to give you a bit of background, even if I think that all of you know already the basic of all this of the ADS-CFT correspondence. So my work fits in this framework of holographic duality. So in particular, we all know that the ADS-CFT correspondence relates theory with gravity on D plus one dimensional anti-de-Sitter spacetime and the conformal field theory in one dimensionless, so conformal field theory in D dimensions. So the prototype of this duality, which is very well tested, is the one related related time to be superstring theory on ADS5 times S5, which is conjectured to be exactly dual to n equals 4 superyamils in 4 dimensions. So this duality is very much tested. So it was it is now well established also in different setups of this different dimensionality. And in particular, the duality is very interesting and powerful because it is of the kind weak strong duality. Namely, this duality relates theories in different coupling regime. So in particular, one can also start, one can think about modeling some strongly coupled field theoretic phenomena via the processes which involve the gravity dual. And the gravity dual usually involves anti-Sitter black holes. And these processes, like black hole phase transitions and so on, in the gravity side, they are pretty much easy to, and they are very well studied and relatively easy to describe. But on the other way around, the holographic duality can also be used to describe what is in the interior of a black hole. And in particular, it was used to achieve the microscopic the understanding of the microstates of black holes which live in anti-Sitter spacetime. So indeed, the microstates of these black holes which live in anti-Sitter should be described by the ground states of the dual field theory, which is a dual CFT. So first of all, let me also discuss a bit how all this fits into what I'm gonna explain. So as all of you know, black holes are seen as thermodynamic ensemble other than elementary objects. Indeed, the laws of mechanics of black hole really resemble the laws of thermodynamics. And this correspondence dates back 40 years ago to Hawking in the 1970s. So black holes emit radiation and possess also an entropy. And the entropy is proportional to the area of the event horizon. So from GR, black hole solution is unique. However, the fact that they possess entropy is indicative of the fact that black holes possess some sort of microstructure. So they are composed by many, many states. And indeed, if you compute the entropy of a black hole for a black hole which is of the size of the one coming from that are in our universe, you get a really, really big number. So of the order of 10 to the 90s. So a black hole is composed by many, many microstates. Well, how can we figure out what are these microstates, what are actually meaning these microstates? So, and there was a landmark paper by Strominger and Waffa, which in the context of string theory, indeed perform the microstate counting. So black holes in this setup are formed by D-brains, and by counting the states of strings on D-brain, Strominger and Waffa obtained exact matching between black hole entropy and microstates. In our scenario, or at least in what I'm going to describe, we are going to see how we can actually use the information of the dual field theory in the context of an asymptotically anti-de-Sitter black hole to describe what are the microstates and actually to count what are the microstates which actually correspond to this black hole. So another thing that is very important in this sort of holographic matching, or in particular for black hole entropy counting, is that the counting in general requires the presence of supersymmetry. And indeed, so the fact that you need to have supersymmetry, this justifies the fact, or actually, this for this reason, we need to construct black hole solutions, and in particular, anti-Sitter configurations, which is the one that we are going to talk about, which actually have an embedding in M theory or in string theory, such as they have an exact holographic dual. So we can use exact holographic dualities to actually consider the microstate counting. For this reason, we will work in supergravity, which is the low energy description of string theory or M theory. And in particular, we will describe black hole solutions, actually configurations, which are in general, we will call about, we will actually deal with the nut and bolt configurations, which asymptotically are approach four-dimensional anti-sitter spacetime. So the configuration that we are going to talk about will be anti-sitter 4 configuration, which have a field theory dual in the class of BJM. So a BJM is a three-dimensional superconformant Chern-Simons matter with matter in the bifundamental. And a good feature of working with supersymmetric black holes in anti-sitter spacetime, which is like is a very nice feature, is that in anti-sitter black hole solutions which rotate can actually be supersymmetric. This is not possible in asymptotically flat spacetime. So in anti-sitter, extremal rotating black hole solution can preserve some supersymmetries. And indeed, the black hole that you find in our universe, they are not asymptotically anti-sitter. However, they are extremal and they are spinning very, very fast. So they are very close to extremality. So the New Horizon geometry of the supersymmetric black holes which exist in anti-sitter actually resembles a bit what we have exactly in our universe. So about the microstate counting, let me introduce one recent development that fueled my research in this topic. So the recent success is that actually, and there have been some very nice development for which a microstate counting of supersymmetric black hole solution in four dimensions was achieved very recently, about 2 or 3 years ago. So indeed, there are supersymmetric black holes in anti-sitter spacetime. So they preserve 1/4 of supersymmetries, and were found by these people, Cacciatori and Clem, in 2009. So these were the first instance of black hole solution which preserve supersymmetry and are static. And they are relatively simple solutions. So they are black holes which have zero temperature, so they are extremal. And they are flows from an ADS4, so an anti-sitter four-dimensional spacetime. So this is what they are asymptotically. And close to the event horizon, they approach a product of two-dimensional anti-sitter spacetime times a two-dimensional Riemann surface, which I denote with sigma g. So this is the New Horizon geometry. Moreover, these solutions actually realize the topological twist. Indeed, in order to preserve supersymmetry, some components of the spin connection in the SUSY variations need to cancel exactly with some magnetic component of the gauge field. Hence, these solutions will have magnetic charges in general. So the latest development that fueled all this holographic matching program was that indeed, so one can, given this supersymmetric solution, one can actually compute the entropy of these black holes. There will be a function, which is rather complicated, of the electromagnetic charges of your black hole. But so you have a function of the electromagnetic charges, and you can try to reproduce this function, which is the entropy of a black hole, by a field theory computation. So how do you do that? Well, you compute the IBGM partition function on the manifold, which is the boundary of a black hole. So these black holes have a boundary, an Euclidean boundary, which is a product of an S1 times sigma g, or in this case, in this simple case, the sigma g can be a two-sphere, for instance. That's what is the simplest case that was found first. So one can compute the BGM partition function with magnetic flux on S2, because these black hole solutions are actually magnetic. And one can compute the supersymmetric partition function via localization and take the Lagrangian limit. So the Lagrangian limit is the one that corresponds actually to supergravity. And one finds that this supersymmetric partition function reproduces exactly the black hole, the macroscopic black hole entropy, the one that we find in supergravity, upon extremization of this MI. These MIs are the chemical potentials. And also the extremization with respect to this chemical potential has an exact counterpart in supergravity in the attractor mechanism for the scalars at the event horizon. So we find the matching both at the level of numbers, meaning that two functions, the entropy matches with the free energy computed via localization, but also at the level of extremization mechanism, which is also very nice. So what we would like to do, and this comes to the part of the main aim of my talk, is that we would like to extend this consideration, meaning to extend this holographic matching into the case in which the manifold on which the field theory is put is not only a product manifold of the form S1 times sigma g, but it's of the form of an S1 bundle over a two-dimensional Riemann surface. So indeed, recently, people have computed the partition function of n equals 2 superconformal field theories on this sort of manifold, which are schematically okay, I need to use this. They are schematically denoted with this metric, and this denotes, so the number P denotes the churn number of the fibration, which is this one, is the flux of the connection, and the G here. So these manifolds, which we call MGP, they are parameterized by two numbers. One is P, which is the churn number of the fibration, and G, which is the genus of the two-dimensional base manifold, which is here. So why we are interested in this sort of manifold, and why we are interested in performing the holographic matching for this kind of manifolds? Well, first of all, we see that for zero fibration number here, if you put P to zero, this manifold reduces to the one that we have considered before, to the product manifold, that connect to the black hole physics, because they were the ones which were used to perform the microstate counting in the case of supersymmetric black holes. Moreover, if instead we put P to 1 and G to 0, actually this manifold here represents the three sphere. Namely, it is a half vibration on a two-dimensional sphere, which is the three sphere. And this is a quantity which in field theory is very important because it satisfies monotonicity theorem. It is related to the entanglement entropy of a disk portion of space time in a dual field theory, and so on and so forth. So this sort of parametrization here allows us to describe in a unified way all these very, very important cases. Moreover, we can also describe the length space, which is given by generic P and genus zero. So what we would like to do is to describe, first of all, the field theory computation, the large N field theory computation of N equals 2 superconformal field theories in all these cases, but also provide the supergravity dual and see what are relation between the many different cases here. So as I was mentioning before, this first case is the one related to black holes, because indeed the boundary of supersymmetric antisitter black hole for which solutions are known, the Euclidean boundary is actually exactly this product manifold here. So one can actually ask what will be the configuration that will be dual to this more special manifold. And so in general, we would need to find solutions which will be which will live in theories of supergravity, which have exactly as boundary this manifold MGP that I showed you before. And we will see that actually the fact that you have a U1 which is fibered over the 2D Riemann surface is due to the fact that there is some net charge in the supergravity configuration, which actually indeed is responsible for the fibering of the U1. So the rest of my talk is devoted to actually describe the gravity dual, which are the holography dual to this sort of partition function on MGP. So the outline of my talk, I hope I justify the motivation and the framework. So what I'm going to do in the next part of the talk is that I will describe what are actually the gravity configurations which have as boundary this manifold which I call the MGP. Plus, I will also tell you how to perform the holographic matching. So in general, we will find a matching with the partition function, but we will actually have some subtlety when different fillings have the same boundary geometry, and this I will talk about. And finally, I will go on with some outlook and some further directions. So, okay, as for the supergravity backgrounds, so we have chosen to start with the simplest theory of gauge supergravity, which is a theory which has no vector multiples and hypermultiples. So we work in a theory which is called the minimal gauge supergravity. So we have only the gravity multiplet, which also contains as bosonic content, also in particular a vector field. So the bosonic action, so by setting to zero the fermions, we have a bosonic action, which is very, very simple. So I guess that you've already seen, is the Einstein-Maxwell lambda. So indeed, it's the Einstein, Hilbert term, kinetic term for the vectors, and also a term with a negative cosmological constant. So the solutions that we are going to talk about will be solution to the equation of motion coming from this Lagrangian here. Moreover, we also impose supersymmetry. So we will need to find the supersymmetric solution, and the supersymmetric solutions are found by setting to zero the supersymmetry variation of the fermions in the theory. In this case, it's by setting to zero the gravitino supersymmetry variation. And any solution of this kind will uplift locally to a solution M theory, and I will also come back later to this point. So as I was mentioning before, I was anticipating the fact that we have a U1, a boundary in which a U1 is fibered over the 2D base is related to the presence of the net charge, which in this case we will call it with the letter S because it will be related to the squishing. So this S is the net charge. So we consider first some general solution to the equation of motion. So these solutions are known and they were found by Chamberlin and collaborators already. They were dating back to the 1998. So the metric is parametrized in this form here, you see. So the non-trivial fibration comes because this term, the net charge is responsible for the fibration because it's this term here. Is the term responsible for the mixing between the T and phi component. Moreover, it is described by a warp factor here, which contains parameters M, P, and Q, which are related to the Lorentzian, like to the mass and to the magnetic and electric charge of the Lorentzian rotating black hole. Moreover, it's also parameterized by the letter kappa. So kappa denotes the curvature of the 2D spatial part of our metric. So indeed, if you have kappa equals 1, your 2D base is a sphere. If you have kappa equals 0, it is a plane. And if you have kappa equals minus 1, you have two-dimensional hyperbolic space. And so a compact Riemann surface, such as a torus or a higher genus Riemann surface, is obtained by appropriately taking the quotient of these two guys, so of R2 and actually H2. So this is the metric that parameterizes, that actually represents our solution. The solution is also supported by gauge fields. So this is the graviphoton, which have indeed this form here. So the boundary, in our case, it is located at R goes to infinity. So for R goes to infinity, one can indeed check that the boundary geometry is a circle bundle over a constant curvature Riemann surface. So it has this form here. So if you notice, coming from here to the previous slide, I just reparametrized tau. So the coordinate tau was here at the place of time. Here I just changed coordinates, and I just incorporated a factor of 1 over 2s, and I changed coordinates such that this is phi, and all the factor s is just in front of this parenthesis here. So the boundary metric is indeed a circle bundle over a constant Riemann surface, and in particular for the choice p equals 1 and g equals 0, we can impose periodicity 4 pi to this coordinate here, and the boundary is indeed an S3, and it's in particular it's a biaxially squashed S3. So this is the biaxially squashed, so this is the squashing parameter, and you see that for s equals 1/2, one actually retrieves around sphere with no squashing. So now we have these solutions here. We have a boundary, which is exactly the form that we would like. But now we need to impose regularity. So our solution will have a boundary, which is this MGP manifold. And at some point in the bulk, they will cap off. It will finish pretty much. And we'll have to check that these solutions cap off regularly inside the bulk. And so there will be two classes of solution, which are regular in the bulk, depending on the dimension of the fixed point for the Killing vector deep psi. And in particular, the solutions will divide themselves in two classes. One are the knot solution, so the Taub knot. So this is Newman, Unti, and Tamburino, which are the first one that find them, and also Taub. So the acronym is knot. And there are also the other solutions, which are called the bolt. So the knot have an isolated fixed point for the Killing vector deep psi. And instead the bolt, they have a two-dimensional fixed point for this Killing vector. So the knot solutions, so this solution here have different topology. So you need to really see to impose different periodicity and different constraints on the parameter in order to have either the knot or the bolt. So the knot solution has topology which is just R4. And in order to have this, you need that the warp factor, which I call the lambda, which was the function appearing in the GTT or in the GRR component, needs to have a double root at R equals S, this one. So, and this point here is also identified with the origin of R4. So the regularity condition exactly gives that psi needs to be periodic of 4 pi. So in this case, the boundary, as I was mentioning before, it's a squashed S3. However, there can be also be other configurations, and in particular with different topology, they are like disks fibers over S2, for instance, or also over sigma g. So So these solutions are called bolt solutions. So you have a bolt when lambda has a simple root at a radial coordinate, which I denoted as RB, which is strictly bigger than S. And also we need to impose the regularity condition in order for the manifold to couple smoothly. We need to impose this regularity condition here. And again, one needs to also impose some periodicity for the psi coordinate, such that the boundary is, it is in this case, a squashed length space, S3 mod Zp. Bolts can also be generalized to having a base which is a higher genus Riemann surface, so in particular a two torus or a higher genus Riemann surface. So one can also find toroidal or higher genus bolt solution, which have again topology which is a disk fibered over these higher genus Riemann surfaces. So indeed one, so for these solutions you can find, for these configurations, you can find actually regularity conditions such that they couple smoothly inside the bulk. However, you also need to impose supersymmetry because what we are gonna compare these solutions with are supersymmetric partition functions. So supersymmetry also restricts in particular the moduli space of solutions. So some solutions will in general exist for a specific squashing parameter. So they will exist regularly in this sort of, in some specific interval for the squashing parameter S. So we are now ready to impose supersymmetry. So supersymmetry is imposed by the fact that supersymmetry variation, in this case of the fermion, which is the gravitino or the gravitini in our theory, are set to zero. So there are two classes of solutions. So some solutions preserve one half of supersymmetries and some others preserve one quarter. Depending on how the parameters are related, one can actually find one half or one quarter. So since we want to actually provide a generalization of the partition functions that was describing black holes, which were one quarter BPS, we will focus on the second case here. So we will focus on the one quarter BPS solutions because the end goal is to match it with the supersymmetric partition function, which has again, it's one quarter BPS. So we will. So the first results for finding supersymmetric solution were found by Martelli, Passias, and Sparks, where they consider nuts and bolts with spherical base. We generalized this based on the results that were present on this paper to higher genus bolt solutions. So we provide the supersymmetry conditions for our solution to be BPS. And we also we provide the explicit Killing-Spinor parameter. So indeed, one has that these conditions here are necessary and sufficient for your solution to preserve one quarter of supersymmetry for all the bolt and also for the nut solution. In case of the nut, then since you have that the warp factor needs to have a double root, the conditions need boil down to this condition here. While for the bolt, we need to impose again the regularity condition that I showed you before, and this constrains the value of the parameter Q in this form here. So for the bolt solution, we will have up to four different bolt branches, which we denote as bolt plus or bolt minus because they will pairwise give the same free energy. They will pairwise have the same, give the same value for the on-shell action, which will be again to be matched with the field theory result. So again, as I said before, the solution will exist for a specific range of parameters. For the nut solution, there is no problem, meaning that whatever the squashing, there is a solution with the R4 topology, which is the nut solution. And at S equals one half, the boundary is a round sphere. However, for the bolt solution, you need sometimes, for instance, for P equals one or two, these solutions are present only in some specific range of squashing parameter. When you go to higher Chern number instead, one finds that the bolts are present for every value of the squashing parameter. So this is something that you need to take into account when finding regular supersymmetric solution. So this is, for instance, some examples for this. You will have here I plot the free energy. I will tell you how to compute the free energy. But so some bolt solution will actually stop at some point. At some specific value of squashing parameter, while the nut extends all the way up to the squashing, which here is cap to B1. So okay, another one of the last things that I need to mention for the regularity is that in order for, so all the solutions were defined as solutions of four-dimensional supergravity. So we have to solve this Einstein-Maxwell equation of motion and the Suzy variations in four dimensions. However, I mentioned that they uplift locally to backgrounds in M theory, so in 11 dimensions. However, for the uplift to be well-defined, we have that the flux through the bolt that one can compute, so the flux through the bolt that one compute in four dimensions is this one. So in order for the uplift to be actually well-defined, you have that the flux through the bolt to cycle needs to be quantized in a specific way. So if I give you a Sasaki-Einstein manifold, like a seven-dimensional Sasaki-Einstein manifold, on which your four-dimensional solution uplift to 11 dimensions, depending on this number, which is called the Fano number of your Sasaki-Einstein 7 manifold, the flux through the bolt need to be is quantized in a different way. And in particular, the flux through the bolt needs to satisfy, so given the expression of the flux through the bolt here, given this solution, given this here, and given this, one needs to work out the quantization condition for the flux of the bolt, which boils down to this constraint here between the genus and the fibering number of your MGP manifold. So in particular, if we want to uplift our solution on a seven-dimensional sphere, which is the one that corresponds to k equals 1 ABJM, we need to have, in addition, this condition here. So it is plus or minus p plus 2 g minus 1 needs to be a multiple of 4. So this will be exactly retrieved when we will deal with the localization computation, which is a nice consistency check. So now we are ready to compute the Hochschild action. So we have found all these configurations, which have like a preserved supersymmetry, and they are regular in the bulk. So now we are going to compute the objects that we are going to compare with the field theory computation, and this object is indeed the Hochschild action. So what we need to do is to take the solution and you have to plug it into the supergravity action. By doing this, you get, of course, divergences. We are in asymptotically anti-sitter spacetime, well, Euclidean anti-sitter, but still. So we need to regularize this action with the introduction of a cutoff, which here I have called R infinity, like with lots of fantasy. So we need to regularize it with the introduction of a cutoff, and we also need to add the boundary counterterm. So there are very well-defined procedures to add these counterterms. These are procedures of holographic normalization. There exist many reviews and many people have studied that. It's well established. So the boundary counterterms that we need to add are this one. So this is the Ricci scalar of the boundary manifold, and this is the extrinsic curvature. And also in computing the Hochschild action, we also need to take into account that the manifold closes off at R0 equals S for the NAT solution, and at a value RB, which is strictly greater than S for the Bolt solutions. So we plug in the equation, plug in the solution into the action, and we regularize it. We get something like this, and also we get the F squared term gives two different results, one for the NAT and one for the Bolt. We compute also the counter terms. So in the end, we have something which depends both on, in the end, we get some very big expressions for all these single terms. But when you put all together, we found some remarkably simple results. So indeed, from the result that we get for the renormalized Hochschild action doesn't depend on the parameter S, which was the squashing, which was related to the squashing of our sphere, of our boundary. It has a very remarkably simple form, which we find. So in particular for the NAT, this is the result, very simple. And also for the bolt, the squashing parameter also drops out. And in that case, we only find dependence on the fibering number, which is called P, and on the genus of the two-dimensional base manifold. And so we mentioned also that the genus equals zero case, in these two cases, were already found in the paper by Martelli and collaborators. So we generalize all this computation to having a higher genus Riemann surface as a base. So here, okay, we could also consider more exotic configuration, which are mildly singular, which are called the orbifold NAT. And in order to compare it with our background, we will need to also to have the same units of magnetic flux. However, these configurations, they are, first of all, they are mildly singular, but also they are every time their on-shell action is higher than the regular configuration. So we are just going to discard this singular configuration. They will not play any role in our computation. So for every G and P that we have that parameterize our boundary manifold, we can actually plot the on-shell action in function of the squashing parameter. So they're just constant lines because, of course, the on-shell action doesn't depend on the squashing parameter. And moreover, at some point for the Bolt solution, you have solution that actually ceases to exist due to regularity. But this is not really a problem. We will see that it will become more, this case will become more curious later on. And so again, at some point, this solution will cease to exist due to the fact that that some parts, for instance, the function that I denoted before by f plus or minus becomes imaginary, and so on and so forth. So one needs to take into account that some of them exist only in specific range of parameters. And for p equals 2, we have a very specific case, meaning that the NAT solution and one of the Bolt one of the Bolt solution actually they coincide in free energy, and indeed they are continuously connected also as a solution themselves. So this is all pretty much consistent.
Sorry, Kiara. On the CFT side, can you interpret this? How can you interpret the security of solutions?
Yeah, this we still don't know yet. I will tell you about this later. But in the CFT side, you also find that the free energy should not depend on the squashing parameter. So that's something that we also find here. But I will come back to this point. So OK, as a recap, so what are we gonna? So what we have learned so far? So we have constructed all these sort of supergravity solutions, which are regular and preserve supersymmetries, and they have two different topologies. So first of all, and we have also computed their free energy. So we are ready to see what this corresponds on the field theory side. So the topology, well, first you have the NAT topology, which has a squashed S3 boundary, and the free energy is this one. And this is valid for p equals 1, g equals 0, because it's the trisphere. Moreover, we have the Bolt solutions, which have a boundary manifold, which is MGP, which have this free energy here, and they exist only in this sort of only provided that this condition is satisfied. So if you see, if you plug in p equals 1, g equals 0 here, this solution is not satisfied. Sorry, this this equation is not satisfied. So you don't have, at least in this case, for the uplift on an S7, you actually don't have any Bolt solution whose boundary is a trisphere. So there are two separate cases.
What does it mean by the free energy vanishes, like for g equal to 1, k, 0?
G equals, I think it doesn't have a lot of meaning in this case. I mean, you get exactly the same result on the field theory. I don't think that you have any pathology related to that.
So the partition function also vanishes in that case with boundary?
I think what we have it from the field theory side, we actually, yeah, exactly, we match this sort of relation. So I guess that that's what you need to know to take it from there. So okay, now we are ready. So since we have all these solutions, we are ready to compare it with the field theory. So if there are no other questions, then I can just and just go on. So first, we are going to compare the results for the S3, for the squashed S3, in particular for the configurations which are not solutions. So for the free energy on S3, the free energy of superconformal Chern-Simons theories on an S3, who studied like the literature, in particular, there was a study of Hamann, Hosomichi, and Lee, which find two families of solution. And one of these family of supersymmetry background give you a free energy which doesn't depend on the squashing. So that's the one that we would like to compare. So the expression for the partition function, if you compute it at the superconformal point, which is when you set all this equal to m to the 1/2, it exactly matches the expression that you had for the NAT that we have before. This was already noticed from Martelli and collaborators. But indeed, it's reassuring. So it means that we have a background which is regular in the bulk. This is the NAT. we can compute the free energy on a squashed S3, and we find it exactly the free energy match. So what we want to do now, this was already found by Martelli, is we want to actually match the free energy of the Bolt solutions, which are the one with a different topology, that the new solutions that we have found. So for this solution here, so we can take the results from a recent paper by Kosei, Kim, and Willett. So in particular, in this paper, they computed a partition function of superconformal Chern-Simons n equals 2 superconformal Chern-Simons theories, like ABGM-like, which are computed on a background which is exactly MGP. So the background is exactly equal to the boundary of our supergravity configurations. And so I'm going, this is a bit schematic, but the partition function that you get is a sum over vacua of the so-called Bethe-Ansel transition. So and in the partition function, you find that they appear like some different operators, which are related to the various quantities that appear in our 3D 3D manifold. So in particular, you find the fibering operator, which is related to the fact that you have a P number of, in the fibration. You have the handle gluing operator, which is related to the fact that your base manifold has some, can be in principle higher genus. And you also have some other operators, such as the flux operators, appearing also in this sum in the partition function. You need to compare it. So in order to achieve the matching between supergravity and field theory, you need to take the large end limit of the field theory result. And this is something that you can do. In this case, you compare actually, so you have the leading expression for the field theory result should match exactly the supergravity part. And indeed, if you take the larger limit, this is given just by the, well, larger limit is given just when one solution actually dominates. And this is called the extremal superpotential, which I call it here. So if you insert this extremal superpotential in the formula for in order to get the larger limit, this gives exactly this expression here. So this is the expression for the partition function in the larger limit for n equals 2 superconformal Chern-Simons theories in this in the background of this manifold MGP. And you have also some constraints on the fugacities, on the fluxes, and on the R charges. So we are ready now to make contact with our supergravity solutions. So the solutions that we have on the supergravity side were found in the setting of minimal gauge supergravity. So in particular, minimal gauge supergravity corresponds to the case where all the scalars are set to constant, and also all the fluxes are set equal to each other. So in the setting of constant scalars and equal fluxes, you can take all the fugacities to be equal, and all the fluxes that you find here, you find it to be independent of I. So imposing this condition here exactly gives you get exactly this condition here, which coincides with the condition that we have found before for the uplift of our solution on 11 dimensions on a 7th sphere. Moreover, if you plug in, so the fact that you're imposing here gives you this one, but also imposing all this, imposing the fact that this one should be equal, in particular, they should sum to one. So if they're all equal, it should be one quarter. You plug in into the formula that I showed you before, which is here, and you exactly get that the partition function, the value for the large end partition function exactly equals the value that you get from the renormalized Nonchel action for the Bolt solution. And actually, you manage to mesh all the two different sets of Bolt solutions. So you have a plus or minus here. I didn't show, but it should be a plus or minus here. So we managed to match both the value for the Nonchel action for these Bolt solutions, but also the condition from which they uplift on M theory on an S7. So this is a partition function for a BGM theory. Moreover, another check that we perform is that for p equals 0, so we will the p equals 0 case is retrieved by having zero vibration. So in this case, for p equals 0, you retrieve the result that you would get for the partition function on a product manifold of the form S1 times sigma g. And this is exactly reducing to the computation of Zurli and collaborators, which actually gave the entropy of black holes of minimal gauge supergravity with horizons which are Riemann surfaces. So that's another consistency check.
So I have a question. You're answering gravity. I mean, why is it supposed to match with the BGM rather that you need some other theory?
No, no, no. So I am going to show you later what happened in the other theory. So these conditions, this condition here, this one, we got it for the uplift on a seven sphere. Mm-hmm. So this corresponds to have a BGM. But in particular, if you uplift your theory to 11 dimension on another Sasaki-Einstein manifold, like some other more complicated manifold, you will have a different number here. So also, and this will be reflected in the field theory computation, as I'm going to show now. So for BGM, we are the case is pretty clean. So we have that, as I showed you before, the knot should be treated separately. So the knot has S3 boundary, and the S3 boundary the partition function on an S3 was computed before, and it actually matches with the free energy of the knot. However, what we contributed with our work is to match actually the free energy of these solutions, which are Bolt solutions, which have a different topology, but still magnetic flux is threaded into the Bolt. So for a BGM theory, we have that the large N localization result exactly matches with the free energy of the Bolt, provided that this condition here is satisfied. So far, we were happy. So everything is good because we have matched also all the tower of infinite bolts and also the knot configuration. However, we can ask something. There is something which might be worth just digging a bit, just trying to investigate more, I would say. Because we were wondering, OK, what happens if there are actually here this condition here does not contemplate the fact that we can have a P equals 1 and G equals 0 Bolt. So for a BGM, this is not possible because if you plug in the values here, P equals 1, G equals 0, this solution here is not satisfied. Sorry, this equation. However, if you change this number here, there might be that for some manifolds, actually, the Bolt, the P equals 1 Bolt is actually present. And this will be something a bit puzzling. Because if you see, allowing for a P equals 1 Bolt will mean that there are different configurations with the same boundary, which extend into the bulk with different topology. And in particular, one can also try to compute the free energy for all these solutions here. And you find that there can exist up to three filling for the squashed S3. So in particular, you have the knot solution, that is the one that I showed you before. But there are also two other Bolt solutions. And the value of their free energy is 3/8 and 5/8, while the value of the free energy for the knot is, in appropriate unit, is 1/2. So one lies above the knot free energy, and the other one lies below. So in particular, you find these two configurations here that actually end at some point, but one of which has even less free energy than this one. Less free energy than the knot solution. And this is puzzling because in general, people, in order to verify the F theorem and so on, they actually take the value of the free energy, which is given by the knot, because this is the one that corresponds to the, for S equals 1/2, correspond to the round sphere. It corresponds actually to Euclidean ADS4. So we were very intrigued by this case. We wanted to see if actually there exists cases in which all these three configurations, they can actually coexist. Actually, they are allowed by the quantization condition. So we wanted to find it. We wanted to investigate a bit more. So what by just scanning the various allowed regular Sasaki-Einstein manifold, you realize that there exists some truncation that allow for all the Bolt to uplift to 11 dimensions. So one of these is the manifold which is called M32. So it's a regular Sasaki-Einstein manifold, which is a it's homogeneous Sasaki-Einstein manifold. So for this sort of Sasaki-Einstein manifold, you can actually get both all the Bolt that they can actually uplift. However, if you compute the dual field theory computation is not under control because the dual quiver is chiral. So the dual computation cannot be performed with the current localization techniques. So this is something that works on the gravity side. However, we have no control in the dual field theory. However, there is another case which is very interesting. And the case is where the Sasaki-Einstein manifold is the Stifel manifold V52. So in this case, the quantization, the Fano number of your manifold is 3, so this appears here. And if you see by inserting P equals 1, G equals 0, you have that the minus sign, this is actually, this condition is satisfied because you will have minus 1, minus 2 equals 0 mod 3. So this works. So in this case, the one with the plus sign doesn't work, but the minus sign works. So for in this sort of uplift, so if you use this manifold for your uplift, you actually get that the Bolt minus uplift is a regular solution in this theory. So we see that this configuration in green is part of your phase space. So for this configuration here, you will have two. You will have both the nut solution, which is the orange one, and the green one, which are actually part of your theory. Our computation, actually, what happens is that our computation exactly matches the Bolt minus solution. So we get 5/4 the value of the I nut of the Young selection for the nut solution. However, other people computed it before, and actually their value coincides with the value of with the selection of nut of the nut configuration. So it looks like in our computation, in this case, we managed in our computation to get a subleading saddle point of the path integral. And the very surprising thing is that we managed to see, with the two different field theory computation, we managed to see two different solutions, which are regular. They have different topology in the bulk, but this is something we were a bit puzzled at first, but at least it's something like probably one of the few cases in which this happened. So for our computation, we actually managed to see also the subleading saddle points in the ones that have higher free energy in gravity. So okay, I come now to the summary with this. If there are no other questions, but you can always ask me. So what I showed you is that we have constructed a full set, so an infinite family of configurations in gravity. So they have a different topology, but they are regular and they preserve supersymmetry. And in particular, when the uplift is possible, when the solution actually satisfies the uplift condition, we actually manage to match their free energy and also the uplift condition, we retrieve them on the field theory computation. And so indeed, we computed the localization, the 3D partition function, and we get a perfect match. So the goal for now would be to try to understand what is really the physics, why do we really managed to see also the subleading saddle point in the path integral from the localization computation, which is something that we didn't expect. Moreover, what we want to do is to try to is actually to perform the computation to find this nuts and bolt solution in the supergravity side in presence of further matter multiplets. So once you add in particular scalars or further vectors you actually have a more intricate phase space. So phase transition between different configurations can arise. And in general, you can find many more configurations that you can match with the field theory result. So the field theory result is already known in the case where the fluxes are not equal. But from the supergravity side, it's much harder, of course. So we need to provide the solutions. Moreover, we have also another possible development will be to try to reproduce the selection of the other family of nut solution. So as I showed you, there were solutions which preserve 1/4 of supersymmetry, which is the one that were directly actually connected with the BBS black holes, for which they have counted the microstate. But also there were some other branch of solutions which preserve 1/2 of supersymmetries. Those ones, for now, they were not matched yet. So that's something that is also a possible further development to try to retrieve with the computation, with the localization computation, the free energy of these solutions, which actually preserve more supersymmetries, and to try to see if also the uplift condition actually matches between gravity and the field theory side. So okay, I think I'm so whatever else. We get different answers because in one case, so from the gravity side, it's very easy to see because you get just two configurations, you plug into the on-shell action, and you see that it actually, you perform the computation, is very easy. In one case, so the procedure that Martelli did is to pretty much when you compute the free energy on the tree sphere, you have to extremize over an eigenvalue distribution. While what we do is to reduce our model to some equations involving the superpotential, which is this function here. Wait, I mean this one. So if you the subleading saddle point is found by actually extremizing the superpotential, not the eigenvalue distribution. So in these cases, we get two different answers, which, however, match two different things in gravity, which is which we didn't expect.
So you directly start with this formula.
Yes. So if you start with this formula, you get five quarters. And instead, if you have the other formula, you get one half. You get one, sorry. One or five quarters. Yes?
There's a recent paper by Pablo Bueno and collaborators that suggests the squash sphere partition functions have a universal behavior. And I can't quite tell from your results. Like, have you checked what you've done in comparison?
In comparison with the...
With this paper by Bueno and collaborators about the universality of squashed sphere partition functions, because that's basically at least a chunk of what you're calculating, if I understood you correctly, right?
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, I think the results that we get are compatible with all the previous literature. I think in those cases, they don't impose supersymmetry, or they just...
Maybe I'll show you the reference afterward.
I think I'm aware of that paper. I think it's Bueno, Bobev, and yes, I think I'm.
Okay. And your result, like, I can't tell from the formula, but it should fit with that if the universality is right. But I can't quite tell.
Yes. Yeah, we can have a look at the paper, but I thought that at least for the tree sphere, we were matching, apart from this subleading saddle point, we were matching all what was known in the literature. In particular, we for the NAT solution, Martelli and Martelli and collaborators computed, so we saw that their procedure was correct. So for from that case, I think we get consistency, but we can check further if you show me the paper.
I'd like to understand that relationship.
Any final questions? Not let's bring it to you.